Yeah, that's a good question. We'll all be familiar with some types of satellite imagery. I'm sure everyone's had a look at Google Earth and Google Maps, and you see the types of imagery that's available from space. And that's getting more and more impressive over time. But there's a whole variety of different satellites out there, and some of them have very, very unique capabilities, which we can take advantage of for mapping Gamba.
So, how did you do the research to see how, if you've got a successful model for guessing where Gamba is?
So what we did in this instance is that we actually commissioned a commercial satellite. So there's a whole host of satellites up in space that are orbiting the globe, collecting very useful information for us. But in this case, we wanted a very specific satellite called the WorldView 3 satellite. And the reason we wanted that one is that it's very high resolution, half a meter resolution on the ground. But more importantly than that, it has 16 spectral bands. Now, when you think of a normal image, like a color photograph, that just has three bands, which is visible to the human eye, red, green, and blue. But what the WorldView 3 satellite allows us to do is look deeper into the near-infrared and shortwave infrared. So we're really looking at the reflected light from the sun as it's coming back from the plant. And by going into these 16 spectral bands, we can look at features in plants that we just can't see with the human eye. And that's key to helping us distinguish different types of vegetation and distinguishing Gamba from other native grasses like sorghum.
So the area you surveyed was near Bachelor. Why did you choose to do your survey there?
Well, we picked that area because that was one of the initial points where Gamba was first introduced as a pasture grass. So there's lots of properties in the area that have high densities of Gamba. And this is a multi-stage project that we're working on in conjunction with Charles Darwin University and the University of Western Australia. And we picked that region because we wanted to be confident in developing signatures of Gamba. So when I say a signature, it's really like a fingerprint. So we want a spectral and structural fingerprint from space that we know this is what Gamba looks like in satellite imagery. So we commissioned it there to capture some of those properties in the Bachelor region, but also to cover the boundary of Litchfield National Park. And that's of key interest to us because Gamba is spreading from that region into the national park.
How widespread is Gamba grass across northern Australia?
Well, the estimates from the NT Weeds branch are about 15,000 square kilometres, but Gamba can establish in areas that just have more than 600 mils of rainfall per year. So modelled predictions are that Gamba could occupy about 380,000 square kilometres. Now, we can't give you an update on those estimates yet. As I say, that study is focused on that one core area. But by and we applied a machine learning approach where effectively we train a computer to learn what Gamba grass looks like. And that helps us take advantage of really big data sets using high-performance computing. And for that area, we could predict Gamba presence with 91% accuracy. Now, the next step from that will be to use those results as training data for open access imagery, which covers the whole of Northern Australia. So the next phase of our project is upscaling from that one case study. Expanding through the NT and then also exploring areas in northern Queensland and WA.
What does Gamba grass look like with the satellite imagery you're using? So you've taught the computer essentially to say, this is Gamba grass to within 91% accuracy. What does that look like if you're looking at the imagery?
Well, if you're looking at very high resolution imagery, you can see it as a very green vegetation in the landscape. But what's quite key and an important part of the study is working with the ecologists like Natalie Rossiter Ratcher and Sam Setterfield, who really know the life cycle of Gamba well. Gamba grass stays green longer into the dry season. So the timing of the image acquisition is very important. That's why we set up this image collection in April. And that's a time of the year when Gamba is still green, but most of the native sorghums have started to dry out. So that's a time of the year when we get a better contrast between Gamba and other native grasses. So during the peak of the wet season, it can be very difficult to distinguish Gamba from sorghum or from some of the wetland grasses because everything's green and flush. But as you start going through those spectral profiles, and if you think of like a near-infrared image, so that's using different combinations of the electromagnetic spectrum, we can start pulling out Gamba even against those really green backdrops.
So it just takes longer to dry out, and that's the way you identify it.
That's one way of identifying it, and the other way is purely on its structure, because it can form very large dense stands up to 3 to 4 meters tall, which is taller than a lot of the native grasses, and that's why it is such a threat, really, because when it burns at a much higher intensity and can be very damaging to the overstory trees.
Now, Sean, I had a brief look at the abstract for the academic paper, and apart from a lot of maths that was well beyond my Year 12 maths, it mentions hyperparameters of an extreme gradient boosting clarifier as a way to identify gamma grass through machine learning. That sounds super impressive. What is gradient boosting?
Well, gradient boosting is a type of machine learning approach. And when we say machine learning, it's really a form of statistical prediction where we are training up a model with known data and making predictions from that. So gradient boosting can be used for regression and classification problems, but it works by building up ensembles of weaker linear prediction models. So we call it decision trees. So there's points in the prediction where you're making splits in the model training, deciding is this gamba, isn't it? And then you take it a step further. And it's very computationally expensive. So our current approach needs to run on high performance computing, which fortunately we have very good facilities through the CSIRO.
You're listening to ABC Radio Darwin. Sean Levick is the principal research scientist at the CSIRO in Darwin. Sean, we're hearing a lot about citizen science these days. Why is it important that the imagery to map gamma grass is open source so that anybody could access it?
Well, there's a number of reasons for that. We want as much as possible for our science to be open and transparent. So it's important that for two main reasons. Firstly, the type of imagery that we collected in this study is very expensive, and it's just not feasible to task and collect that type of imagery over the whole of Northern Australia. We have very good open access satellite systems from NASA and the European Space Agency, collecting imagery up to every 5 to 10 days. We think it's very important that landowners themselves are able to view their own properties and assess their gamba extents, and we don't want that to be a closed system. And the other component of that, and you mentioned the growing use of citizen science, is that the key to training machine learning models and developing these approaches is the training data, to have areas where we know that this is the gamba density at this particular spot and that we can feed that back to the model. So the more people that are able to provide that on-ground data, and importantly also to test our predictions on their own properties. So we will be training and developing these models at a few of our key study sites. But as we start developing the broader regional scale maps, it would just be great to have people able to verify that and send us feedback on those results. Because ultimately to combat the spread of gamba, we need to know where it is and how it's spreading.
You're confident you can detect gamba grass within a 91% accuracy. I'm no statistician, but is that good enough? Is that good enough to start making decisions about where gamba grass is and isn't?
Yes, that's a very good result for this type of work. The only caveat I would mention is that that is collected under optimal conditions. I mentioned that April window, and the landscapes that, we're dealing with up here are very complex. You'll be familiar with large number of fires that we have across the landscape. So when areas have burnt, that obviously alters the, spectral signature. So we're working on ways of using that a time series of imagery that's been collected to map Gamba. So I think, you know, the 91% is what we achieved in, the study under optimal conditions. I'd be quite happy if we are in the region of 70 to 80% as we start going through the, larger scale mapping.
And what can landholders do with this information if it becomes widely available?
When this becomes available, the, first thing they can do is verify the, accuracy of the product, but particularly on large stations and large tracts of land where access is difficult. If you're controlling Gamba on the ground, this can help target those efforts. And if we're able to start developing models of how Gamba is spreading, we can also identify the, sort of the target points where it would be most effective to start to combat Gamba.
Sean Levick, Principal Research Scientist at the CSIRO in Darwin, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Rick.